This is the Africa service of Vatican Radio.
Welcome to our half-hour daily program for Africa.
In today's program, you can hear our feature, Family. First, however, our bulletin of church news. I am Festus Tarawali. Pope Leo XIV presided over Mass on Sunday morning on the occasion of the Jubilee of Families, Children, Grandparents and the Elderly. In his homily, he reflected on the family as a source of communion and faith and challenged everyone to ground their love in Christ, which he said can bring peace to the world. Kelsey Garcia reports.
Reflecting on the gift of life, Pope Leo XIV called to mind the words of his predecessor, Pope Francis, who explained how we are all sons and daughters, but none of us chose to be born. Furthermore, he highlighted from the moment of our birth, we depend on others to survive. All of us are alive today thanks to a relationship, a free and freeing relationship of human kindness and mutual care.
Tutti noi viviamo dunque grazie a una relazione, cioè a un legame libero e liberante di umanità e di cura vicendevole.
Pope Leo underscored that this is the message we are called to share with the world, that we are here to be one in our families and in those places where we live, work, and study. But he clarified that being one does not mean being the same. While we are all different, we are all called to be one, always and in every situation and stage in life. In a world full of conflict and disagreement, the Pope encouraged everyone to ground their love in Christ, because he said if we do this, we will be a sign of peace for everyone, in society and in the world. This, he reminded everyone, starts at home, as families are the cradle of humanity's future. Building on this, he said in recent decades, there are more and more examples of holy families. There have been a number of married couples who have been beatified and canonized. Pope Leo gave the example of the parents of St. Therese of the Child Jesus and the Ulma family from Poland. The Pope explained that the Church's call for the marriage covenant to be respected today is important, because it is unifying and has a reconciling power that can change the world. He reiterated that marriage is not an ideal, but the measure of true love between a man and a woman, a love that is total, faithful, and fruitful.
Il matrimonio non è un ideale, ma il canone del vero amore tra l'uomo e la donna, amore totale, fedele, fecondo.
And this relationship, he urged, should be an example of integrity for children on how to act. To conclude, Pope Leo stressed that the family is where faith is handed on from generation to generation. He said, it is shared like food at the family table and like love in our hearts. Therefore, the family is a privileged place to meet Jesus. I'm Kelsey Gussie.
In his Regina Caeli address at the conclusion of the Holy Mass, he offered greetings to participants in the Jubilee and spoke about the Feast of the Ascension, which is marked in many local churches on Sunday. He also recalled today's World Communications Day, the 59th edition. Linda Bodoni has this report.
At the end of the Mass, Pope Leo XIV greeted those families celebrating their Jubilee who were gathered in St. Peter's Square for the Regina Caeli prayer, and he reflected on the Feast of the Ascension of the Lord.
Desidero rivolgere un caloroso saluto a tutti voi partecipanti al Giubileo delle famiglie, dei bambini, dei nonni e degli anziani.
Greeting delegations from 131 countries from every part of the world here in the Vatican for the Jubilee of families, children, grandparents and the elderly, Pope Leo XIV turned his thoughts to those families suffering war in the Middle East, in Ukraine and in other parts of the world.
A causa della guerra in Medio Oriente, in Ucraina, in altre parti del mondo.
May the Mother of God help us to press forward on the path of peace.
La Madre di Dio ci aiuti a camminare insieme sulla via della pace.
Expressing particular joy for the presence of children and for the hope they bring, the Pope described families as small domestic churches where the message of the gospel is received and passed on.
Piccole chiese domestiche in cui il Vangelo è accolto e trasmesso.
And quoting from St. John Paul II's letter to families, Gratissimam Sane, he said, the family has its origin in that same love with which the Creator embraces the created world.
Ha origine dall'amore con cui il Creatore abbraccia il mondo creato.
May faith, hope and love always increase in our families, the Pope added, with a special thanks to grandparents and to the elderly, whom, he said, are a model of genuine faith and an inspiration for the younger generation. And then Pope Leo went on to remind the faithful that in many parts of the world the solemnity of the Ascension of the Lord is being celebrated this Sunday. It is a beautiful feast, he said, which makes us look forward to the goal of our earthly journey.
È una festa molto bella che ci fa guardare alla meta del nostro viaggio terreno.
Thus he recalled the beatification on Saturday in Poland of Cristofora Klomfas and 14 other sisters of the congregation of Saint Catherine, Virgin and Martyr. The sisters, he explained, were killed in 1945. When the Red Army invaded Poland. Despite a climate of hatred and of terror against the Catholic faith, they persevered in their service to the sick and orphans. The Holy Father then commended to the intercession of the new blessed martyrs all those women religious throughout the world who devote themselves generously for the sake of God's kingdom. Finally, the Pope remembered that today marks the 59th World Day of Social Communications, established in 1967 by Pope Paul VI, and he expressed his gratitude to media professionals who, he said, by upholding the ethical quality of their messages, support families in their educational role.
Aiutano le famiglie nel loro compito educativo.
On Saturday evening, Pope Leo XIV joined the faithful at the conclusion of the prayer of the Rosary in the Vatican Gardens to mark the end of the Marian month of May. Speaking at the end of the candlelight procession that followed the path of the joyful mysteries, the Pope invited the faithful to walk with Mary. He began by expressing his joy at being part of the vigil, describing it as a gesture of faith through which, in a simple and devout way, we gather under the maternal mantle of Mary. He noted that the vigil reflected the spirit of the Jubilee year, with its focus on praise, journey, hope and faith, before recalling the words of St. John Paul II, who described the rosary as a prayer with a Marian character and a Christological heart that reflects the depth of the gospel message. The Holy Father then went on to encourage everyone to look at their lives as a journey of faith. Pope Leo XIV has sent a message to the bishops of France on the occasion of the centenary of the canonization of three French saints, in which he calls for missionary renewal in European nations. In the message published on Saturday, the Holy Father speaks of the country's Christian heritage, which he said still profoundly permeates French culture and remains alive in many hearts. Joseph Tulloch reports.
The first of the three figures mentioned by Pope Leo was Saint Thérèse of Lisieux, a 19th century French Carmelite nun. The second was Saint John Eudes, a French priest, founder of the Congregation of Jesus and Mary and the Congregation of Our Lady of Charity. The third figure mentioned by the Pope was Saint Jean-Marie Vianney, more commonly known as the Curé of Ars, a French priest celebrated for his pastoral zeal, confessional practice and his intense prayer life. In his letter to the French bishops, Pope Leo said that the saints he had mentioned, quote, loved Jesus without reserve in a simple, strong and authentic way. Pope Leo added that celebrating the centenary of the canonization of these three great French saints is, quote, an invitation to give thanks to the Lord for the wonders he has accomplished in this land of France over many centuries. This Christian heritage still belongs to you, Pope Leo stressed. It still deeply permeates your culture and remains alive in many hearts. That is why I hope that these celebrations will not merely nostalgically recall a past that is long gone, but will awaken hope and a spark of new missionary momentum. End of quote. Having given France these three great saints, Pope Leo XIV wrote, God can once again renew the wonders that he accomplished in the past. Could not Saint Thérèse, the patroness of missions, become the patroness of missions in the very lands where she was born? The Pope asked. And he added that the two priestly figures, the anniversary of whose canonization is being celebrated, could also give courage to young men to respond to God's call, especially in a time of priest shortages. Bringing his letter to a close, Pope Leo invoked the intercession of the three saints on behalf of France and the country's Catholics, who, he said, press on amid contrary and sometimes hostile winds of indifference, materialism and individualism. I'm Joseph Tullock.
In Uganda, pilgrims have been arriving at the shrine of Namugongo for the June 3rd Uganda Martyrs Day celebration. The 2025 celebration will be held under a theme inspired by the Jubilee year. O Lord, let me see again, I, your pilgrim of hope. As you will hear in this report by John Baptist Tumusime, Bishop Christopher Kaguza of Lugazi Diocese has issued a message welcoming the pilgrims.
The Bishop of Lugazi Catholic Diocese in Uganda, the Right Reverend Christopher Kaguza, has extended a message of welcome to the thousands of pilgrims from neighboring countries and beyond, and from Uganda who have started walking hundreds of kilometers to take part in the celebrations of the Feast of the Uganda Martyrs, scheduled for June 3rd. Bishop Kaguza reminded the pilgrims that the true purpose of their journey is spiritual renewal, prayer, and honoring the legacy of the martyrs. The Uganda Catholic Bishops' Conference chose the Diocese of Lugazi to animate this year's celebrations. The Uganda Catholic martyrs are 22 in number. They were killed between 1885 and 1887 on the orders of a local king known as Mwanga. The organizers are expecting more than 2 million pilgrims to converge at Namugongo Uganda Martyrs Shrine on June 3rd.
The late Pope Francis celebrated Mass at the Catholic Shrine of the Ugandan Martyrs on the 28th of November 2015, calling the martyrs true witnesses of the Gospel. He also spoke about the example of the Ugandan martyrs in his address to civil authorities and members of the diplomatic corps at State House in Uganda a day earlier on the 27th of November 2015. In other news, alcoholic drinks, especially beer and spirits, may raise the risk of pancreatic cancer, a new UN study has found. UN News' Daniel Johnson has this report.
A new study published Monday revealed that alcoholic drinks can moderately increase the risk of pancreatic cancer. The pancreas is an essential organ for men and women, which produces enzymes to help break down food and hormones that control blood sugar levels. Led by the UN World Health Organization's International Agency for Research on Cancer, or IARC, researchers pulled data from nearly 2.5 million people across Asia, Australia, Europe and North America. Their results revealed a modest but significant association between alcoholic drinks and the risk of developing pancreatic cancer, independent of the drinker's sex and whether they smoked. Beer and spirits were found to be especially significantly risk-increasing. Alcohol consumption is a known carcinogen, but until now the evidence linking it specifically to pancreatic cancer has been considered inconclusive, said Pietro Ferrari, senior author of the study at the WHO's Cancer Research Agency and head of its Nutrition and Metabolism branch.
Daniel Johnson of UN News reporting. You're tuned to the Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
And now our feature, family. Church in Africa as a family of God. Its people, challenges, values, and hopes.
My name is Father Paul Samasumo with your program, Family. Zambian national Musamba Muvanga works with Caritas International is here in Rome. She's our guest on Family.
I am Musamba Mwanga and I work for Caritas Internationalis as Senior Advocacy Officer on Food Security and Climate Change. So as Caritas, we are a global confederation of 162 national Caritases, and our work is beyond humanitarian, but we also get to do a lot of development work and also focusing on peace building efforts. And our target or our work is covered in all the seven regions of the world. So that includes Africa, Asia, Latin America and the Caribbean, Europe, the Middle East, and also the Pacific. And so narrowing down to the case of Africa, I think it's worth mentioning that we also have a regional secretariat there called Caritas Africa. And Caritas Africa work with 46 national Caritases. And our work is really more, like I said earlier, beyond just a humanitarian aspect, but issues to do with development and how the many national Caritases are implementing development-related projects to be able to respond to the many challenges that the communities are focusing on. And if I just maybe try and narrow it down to my specific scope of work around food security and climate change, our role at that level as Caritas is really more to be able to accompany the national Caritases in terms of responding to their needs through the many projects that have been implemented. Like I said, so I speak of issues to do with food insecurity, the water crisis, among other challenges that they're facing. So it's really more about providing a space where locally led initiatives can actually be implemented. So most of the projects that are being implemented in Africa by the national Caritases are more of projects that enhance more of local sovereignty, but also encourage a situation where projects should go beyond addressing the immediate needs, but really looking at the long-term sustainability of ensuring that communities enhance their resilience. And then the other aspect is also around the fact that most of these national Caritases on the ground, and for the case of a number of countries in Africa, they also get to coordinate around trying to monitor some of the policies at national level in terms of reviewing and monitoring the gaps that exist. That I think most of the times don't get to respond to the needs on the local ground. And so Caritas is at the local level, it's really more of them being able to do lobby and advocacy around being able to bring to light some of the challenges that they've noticed on the ground and also trying to see how police should actually complement or respond to those particular issues. And so from the global space, it's really more being able to accompany these national Caritases, being able to hear from them the experiences that they've gathered on the ground, and also the lessons that they've picked around what's happening at the local level, the challenges that communities are facing, but also being able to share with us in terms of some of the challenges that also they're facing around the policies that don't seem to address the issues on the ground. And so our role also borders in terms of how we're actually able to bear the experiences from the grassroots and also be able to share in many different international fora, say, for example, in Rome, but also even just outside the Rome space.
What are you hearing? What are you seeing in Africa? Is the food situation worsening? Is it getting any better? Is there any hope? We know there's climate change, there's floods, and sometimes there's also drought.
Honestly, from my personal level and even from what we've gathered as Caritas, it's worth mentioning, sadly, that the food insecurity issue is something that is far from being addressed. And I think there are many external factors which are leading to this. Of course, I think a lot of national governments are making strides to be able to respond to these challenges. But I think it's worth mentioning that this still remains a challenge. And I think most of it is beyond the external factors, but also looking at the fact that most of the policies that exist on the ground don't really seem to address the real issues or the real causes of food insecurity, but it's really more around addressing the immediate needs, like I said earlier on, but then also most of them are not responding to the long-term sustainability, where it's just not really about having people eat food just there and then because they have to address the issue of starvation, but it's really more around something that most of the times doesn't take a holistic approach. Because the example I would give is if we're speaking of addressing food insecurity, there are also other issues to do with water security. And so it's also another aspect to do to the fact that most of the policies that also exist don't really seem to take the holistic approach in terms of it taking a multi-sectoral approach in terms of addressing the challenges. Yeah.
Is it lack of political will? Is it an issue of governance or just disinterest? Politics, people just wanting to get to the next level without having a holistic view of things.
So honestly, I think beyond political will, I think it's also the aspect of looking at addressing the immediate problem, but not really taking time to look at the issues that are really causing these challenges. So I think really going down in terms of identifying the root causes of poverty. So I think even given the context that was being discussed today around just energy transition, I think, for example, most of the people in the rural areas, for example, depend on charcoal production as a source of livelihood. And even in a case when you are speaking about just energy transition, introducing clean energy technologies, you find that it's very hard for actually people to move away from this because that's their main source of livelihood. And in a case where it's taken away, it will just really exacerbate the poverty issues and also continue to affect food insecurity. But also above it, I think from our perspective as Caritas, it's more to do with the fact that most of the programs, projects that are being taken on the ground don't really seem to be locally led in the fact that they are more of taken there and not that communities have actually had a role to play in terms of being able to influence what those programs should look like. So most of the times, most of the initiatives that are on the ground don't really seem to be owned up by the local communities, and even in many other contexts are never adaptive to the local context. So hence it also pointing to the fact that we cannot really solve issues on the ground if it's really something that local communities barely have contribution in terms of being able to define what kind of solutions should be taken for them to actually implement and address their challenges.
So interesting that you bring up this issue of energy, because that's the conference that you have been attending, and you spoke at this conference about some of these issues of listening to communities, what are their interests, and taking on board what their needs are. But it's not happening. And we are here and probably will be here again next year saying, what do we do?
That's a very hard question, but I think if we're going to speak about just energy transition, I think you cannot even use the word just if the local community is not even involved in any space. And so I think what really needs to happen is a situation where this just energy transition should just not focus on the economic things and the technologies that need to be adopted, but I think it's really more putting at the center the communities who are heavily impacted. And I think even now we're having the climate change conference coming up, COP30, and already just energy transition is something that's top on the agenda. And so we're going to see a number of African countries that are going to be on the table. And again, the question is, every time an experience is shared or a challenge, is it something that really takes on board the issues that are existing on the ground? So I think if really we need to get to a point where we have just energy transition, it's really making sure that all players actually have a role to play and they actually are able to share their needs if we really have to respond to this particular challenge.
So there's so much talk about solar. Is that the route? Are the people being consulted, or again, is the top-down like has happened in the past?
So honestly, I think the issue of solar, I think what we have seen so far is really more around the issue of it being a top-down approach. And even in a case, I think, a number of African countries, we have seen that they have tried to provide some incentives where it's something that can easily be accessible by a number of citizens. But I think, again, it begs the issue of question, because even the issue of solar, it's something that somebody living in the rural areas cannot easily afford. So even in a case where those incentives are present, it's really more of those in the urban, for lack of a better word, the few privileged who can really access these facilities. And so what is really important is being able to diversify the sources of power, but then also being able to just embrace the locally led initiatives. I would want to speak to something that we have picked from Caritas level in terms of how communities are promoting a technology that they're calling the production of green charcoal. And this is charcoal that's actually made from locally existing natural resources. Speak of just the leaves and also some of the maize cobs that is burnt, and then they're able to produce charcoal. So this is already something that is green, but it's something that is being done at the local level, at a small scale, but it's something that's not really embraced by a number of policies. So I think really if we have to really look at diversifying and also the solar option, I think it's something that needs to take into account a holistic approach when it comes to diversification, and then also taking time to understand that contexts are different. So what is really more accessible and what is workable in the urban area is something that cannot work in the rural area.
Very interesting. I probably have to leave it here, but thank you so much. Any last word?
In terms of the last phase, I think it's really just re-emphasizing the aspect to do with how the many solutions, decisions, and if we're speaking just energy transition, and also if we have to tackle poverty on the ground, it's really about focusing on these issues with a mindset of integral human development. I think from the Caritas side, I think this is something that we have noted that most of the projects that we're implementing on the ground are taking a holistic approach. And I think when you're speaking integral human development, it's really more going beyond issues to do with technology, the economical language, but it's really more ensuring that whatever innovations that are being taken or promoted are really looking at the dignity of a human being and not really about addressing or really looking at it from a multifaceted approach.
Samba Mubanga, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Father.
You have been listening to Family with Father Paul Samasumo.
You're tuned to the Africa Service of Vatican Radio. Praised be Jesus Christ. Laudetur Jesus Christus.